You're tuned in to the Kojo Namdi Show. I'm Mark Fisher from the Washington Post, sitting in for Kojo. The stories on social media quickly went viral. 14 girls of color had gone missing in the district in 24 hours. The outrage was palpable, the response nationwide. But the story wasn't quite right. The number of missing children had actually gone down. Most of the cases were runaways, not abductions, and nearly all of the cases had been resolved. Still, the story stayed alive and continues to circulate on social media, winning attention from celebrities and from the Congressional Black Caucus, which asked the FBI to investigate. Now D.C.'s mayor has created a task force to focus on missing girls of color. It's a jumble of good intentions and incendiary rumors. Has the story of the missing girls of color done more good or harm? Here to help us thrash this out are Michelle Garcia. She's the director of the Office of Victim Services and Justice Grants in the district, and she will now head the mayor's task force on missing children. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Bob Lowry is vice president of the Missing Children Division at the Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Welcome to you.
No, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Michelle Garcia, the perception that has developed in recent days is that there's this epidemic of girls of color gone missing in the District of Columbia, but there really hasn't been a spike in missing children in the city. In fact, 14 girls did not go missing in 24 hours, nothing even remotely like that. So what happened? How did this get out?
As the mayor said last week, even one missing young person is one too many. And so MPD started engaging the public via social media to get the information about these missing youth out into the public so we could engage with the public to help us in find these youth and bring them home. And for many people, it appeared, as you were saying, that there was an uptick in missing girls, but really that wasn't it. We were trying to use the technology that is available to us to ensure that we can bring these girls home, and girls and boys home, and bring them home safely.
And the technology was a series of photographs that were being posted online by the district police department. And this was actually an effort to make this problem more visible. It maybe made them a little too visible, I guess.
Absolutely. D.C. is really, I think, taking the lead in the country in terms of the efforts we are expending in order to try and address the issue of missing and runaway youth. That by publicizing these via social media, where many people actually will see these, and in fact, we know that those alerts have actually resulted in some of these youth coming home or being found. So it's doing exactly what we intended it to do.
But there's been a lot of misinformation out there in recent days, and let's try to set that straight. What are the numbers actually when it comes to missing children in the district? Are they going up, down?
Well, what we've seen is, compared to previous years, the numbers are actually down quite a bit. And in fact, of those that are missing, the majority have been located. So we're not seeing an uptick in missing youth. We're not seeing an increase. But again, even one missing youth is one too many.
Bob Lowry, why did this story have such power? Obviously, even if the facts weren't quite right, many people thought it was plausible that there would be this explosion of such cases. Why did people seem to be ready and willing to believe this?
Well, I think there were some misunderstandings that from the public on, you know, what the risk these children were facing. But I also want to point out is that it's too quick that we can dismiss a runaway child as simply a behavioral problem. This is something that we've talked about a lot since this conversation started. So we think the conversation itself is a very good one, a very healthy one. Many of these children, even though they're runaways, they face great risk, and that we need to be cognizant of that, and the public needs to be cognizant. So when the DCPD started posting these images and engaging the public as the eyes and ears of law enforcement, obviously we applaud that effort, because that's what gets our kids back home, is the public's help and spotting those kids and reporting.
You can join our conversation about missing children in the district by calling 1-800-433-8850 or email us at kojo@wamu.org. And Michelle Garcia, there is a substantial number of people in the city and around the country who are all too willing to believe the worst about missing children in the district, in part because of two very troubling cases. A couple of years ago, a veteran D.C. police officer was arrested and eventually sent to prison for prostituting teenage girls in southeast Washington. Another D.C. police officer was also arrested around the same time for taking photographs of a 15-year-old girl in various stages of undress. That officer committed suicide before going to trial. So there is a history that is quite troubling. How has that made it, changed the ability of the city to kind of get the word out about what is real in this matter?
I think the issues that you raise around sexual exploitation and human trafficking has been part of the narrative as well, something we definitely have to look at. And in the cases of the missing youth that we've seen this year, there's no evidence tying those specifically to human trafficking. However, we know that when youth are not home, when they're not safe, they are more vulnerable to predators who will prey on them because they're not under the care of a responsible adult. And so that has to be part of our conversation, even though it is not what we're seeing in these cases. Specifically.
Bob Lowry, how common is abduction of children as opposed to runaways?
Well, it's very rare. In fact, less than 1% of the children that are reported missing are actually victims of what we call a stereotypical abduction, and that's an abduction by a stranger who may violently take a child from maybe going to or from school. Now, while we do caution that we've seen a significant decrease in those kinds of cases, I also want to point out that we still believe there are dangers that exist, and we don't want to be fear mongers. But you know, many times I think our abductors have been persuaded from acting out and grabbing kids largely because of technology. The fact is that all of us are carrying cell phones today with cameras. We can quickly report to law enforcement what we've seen. There are cameras in most public buildings now. All that discourages these offenders from acting out. But what we have seen, and while social media is a great powerful tool to communicate with the public about missing children, it can also be a platform by offenders who are reaching out and contacting our children and grooming them. And too often, you know, and this is a process that takes, weeks, months to gain the trust of the children. But well, oftentimes these children will voluntarily, and I use that very cautiously, but they go with these offenders because they've been groomed to do so. My point being is the offenders are using this as a platform of taking our children, and these are not runaway kids. These kids are technically going to be abducted children.
And so has the definition or at least the character of abductions shifted as a result of technology from the kind of stranger on the street to something that's kind of arranged online?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and abduction from a street corner is extremely rare. It does still occur, and I want to be very careful that we're not saying that every corner is safe. There are offenders who are looking for opportunities to take children, but technology has been a game changer when it comes to criminal behavior and activity. I said what's disturbing to me is that there's so many social media outlets now, but they're coming right into our homes. They're coming right into your child's bedroom. They're contacting your children. They're presenting themselves as someone who they're not. Typically, they're presenting themselves as another child, only to find out this is maybe an adult sex offender who may be contacting our children. And we've seen that more prevalent than any other time.
Bob Lowry is vice president of the Missing Children Division at the Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And you can join our conversation at 1-800-433-8850. And we're also talking with Michelle Garcia, who is going to head the mayor's task force on missing children. And Michelle Garcia, what will that job entail? What's your objective here?
So I'm actually co-chairing that working group with Brenda Donald, who's the director of the Child and Family Services Administration. And it's bringing together both district agencies and community-based organizations who provide services and work with youth, runaway youth, homeless youth, youth who may have experienced dating or sexual violence, and other community partners to look at several things that we can do. One, ensure that anytime a youth returns home, that we have a process in place to assess why that youth left, to see if they've been sexually exploited, to see if they're experiencing other types of violence or victimization, to assess for mental health or substance abuse issues, and really wrap around services for that young person as well as their family. And that's the second piece, ensuring that we have supports in place for their families while youth are missing, and then services when they return home to help reintegration and stabilize that family. And then lastly, we want to look at prevention efforts. Ideally, we want to keep youth from leaving home, and that means working with youth, working with families, families and seeing what programming we can put into place, whether it's in our schools, our summer youth employment program, anywhere that we can touch youth to get them the resources that they need.
I want to bring into our conversation now Benjamin Radford. He's the deputy editor of Skeptical Inquirer. It's a science magazine. He's also the author of several books, including Media Mythmakers, How Journalists, Activists, and Advertisers Mislead Us. And Benjamin Radford, when the D.C. Police Department decided to start using social media to publicize some of these cases of missing juveniles, they never expected it to blow up quite like this and become a story about a rash or epidemic of girls of color suddenly gone missing. Why do some stories catch fire like this?
Well, you make a good point. I mean, and certainly they didn't expect the reaction that eventually came up. But in fact, it was really predictable. I mean, because you have people who are obviously genuinely and sincerely and legitimately concerned about missing kids. I mean, who isn't worried about that? And yet these sorts of stories, we see them in social media, we see them in news media, and, you know, people want to share information that they think might actually help, you know, save kids and solve things. So I think the intentions were very good all around. I don't question anyone's intentions. Unfortunately, you know, certainly when it was predictable this would happen, you know, you have the public would reasonably assume the list put out by the police would be new and urgent and accurate, and not be including, you know, old cases and ones that have since been found. And so there's a tendency to assume that any new information, particularly about missing kids, is urgent and hasn't been resolved. And, of course, people forward and share things on social media all the time that they haven't fact-checked.
Is there something about the moment that we're in, the times that we're living in, that makes people more likely to spread misinformation? This story has been retweeted by celebrities, by lots of other people across the country, politicians and so on. Is it something about the role of social media and technology that spreads misinformation? Or is it something about the political moment? What do you see as the core reasons here?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. One of them is, of course, the as you pointed out, that the ease of the social media provides for sharing information and misinformation. And, you know, the Internet has been a wonderful, amazing thing. And unfortunately, it shares good information just as quickly as it shares bad information, if not more so. And so what I always encourage people to do is to give some thought to what you're sharing, what you're liking. And before things get spread around and amplified by the news media or celebrities, you know, take a second to see is this really a problem? I mean, no one doubts, as was said before, no one doubts that you know these abductions do actually occur. You know, sex trafficking is a real problem, but on the other hand, it also can lead to sort of an overreaction where the public might become inured by seeing continual alarms when in fact there isn't. These particular cases have been resolved.
You know, a lot of the spread of this rumor has come through the news media, and some media outlets have been hyping the story despite having the ability, or some would say the responsibility, to correct the misinformation and dispel the hype. What's going on there? Why are some outlets so willing to pick up on something this sensational and go with it despite having facts available to counter that?
Well, unfortunately, you know, there's the demand to be first with news, right? And so if you have competing news organizations, the one that manages to put out the information first, they're going to be lauded for, you know, being on the front lines of protecting children. And so there's this tendency to sort of try and get out the information as soon as possible and maybe fact-checking it later. Keep in mind, again, that there's lots of people trying to do the right thing here, right? You have journalists who are trying to do the right thing. You have child protective services trying to do a thing, police. Everybody feels like they're doing good, but, you know, there's a danger in that. I mean, I'm reminded of the Pizzagate case where, you know, there was a rumor that spread around that there was a pizza place that right there in D.C. where children were being taken into sex trafficking. So somebody went in there with a gun trying to protect children. So, you know, good intentions aren't enough. You have to fact check.
Ben Radford is the deputy editor of Skeptical Inquirer Science magazine. We're talking about the issue of missing children in the District of Columbia, and you can join our conversation by calling 1-800-433-8850. Tell us why you think the missing girls of D.C. story has gotten so much attention nationally, and whether you think the media have a responsibility to correct the misinformation circulating about missing girls in the district. Let's go to Vincent in Virginia Beach. Vincent, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. Thank you for having me. I'm curious. I'm also a journalist for Indian Country Today, and I've covered extensively about the missing and murdered Indigenous women in Canada, missing children, missing women and girls here in the States. And there's something I was curious of, if either you're yes, no, Ms. Garcia or the other gentleman. I've seen shared, you know, tens of thousands of times on social media, Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, about these placards, these small signs on the side of the road that say, you know, if you want to make extra income, you know, looking for young women to make thousands of dollars a month, no experience needed, call this number. And the plaques with the numbers and everything, and people are even said, I've called this number, and a guy got angry and hang up on me, and this is sex trafficking. And there's a lot of people who are purporting the same thing. I'm just curious if either of your guests have heard of this or know of any connection to possible, you know, verifiability or
sure. Support. Bob Lowry?
Well, you know, to his point, I mean, obviously there's people have to be cautious with whoever they come into contact with. I'm not aware of any current search circumstances where that's being done, but certainly would not be surprised to learn that some nefarious characters are luring people that way. The last time that we even heard the discussion was we had what we called travelers, where folks were bringing numbers of young adults or children together to sell magazines door-to-door, and they were traveling city to city, and there were some allegations of some maltreatment, victimization there. So we have heard of that, but again, I'm not aware of anything that's going on currently.
There's an excellent film that was out last year called American Honey about these groups mm-hmm. of teens who are recruited and sent around the country, theoretically selling magazines, but there's more going on there, and sometimes there are indeed trafficking issues going on. Bob Lowry is the vice president at the Center for Missing and Exploited Children. We're also joined by Michelle Garcia, who's heading the mayor's Task Force on Missing Children. We'll take more of your calls and get into this question of what the city ought to be doing about the problem of missing children after a short break. I'm Mark Fisher.
This month at WAMU, we're lifting our voices to shine a light on Black changemakers throughout American history. Some you know and some you don't, but they all change the world. Go to WAMU.org/lifteveryvoice to learn the stories of these incredible African-American changemakers and to hear special interviews spotlighting those who have impacted the arts, sciences, sports, and activism. Go to WAMU.org/lifteveryvoice.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Fisher from The Washington Post, sitting in for Kojo, and we are talking about the problem of missing children in the district and around the country. And you can join our conversation at 1-800-433-8850 or email us at kojo@wamu.org. And we have an email from Tassa, who says, we as a society have grown dependent on fake news. People in D.C. therefore may prefer the story of children who have disappeared rather than simply to have run off. After all, it's much more sensational and will provoke a grand stir in the community. And Michelle Garcia, this problem of the distinction between kids who are just simply running off and those who are, you know, have been taken, is that a useful distinction? What you know, people seem to be very much caught up in that question of, you know, these are not just kids who have run off. There's something more nefarious happening.
I think at any time a child is away from home or away from the care of an adult, whether they've left on their own or whether they have been abducted, it requires us to look at that, and it requires us to respond thoughtfully to that. I don't I understand that making a distinction to that, it seems much more sensational to think that there's a nefarious force out there that are abducting children off the street. And I don't know if it's the sensational piece or if it feels a little more comfortable than to think that our youth are willingly making a choice to walk away from their homes and then having to analyze what is behind that, which I think may be a little bit more of a difficult or uncomfortable conversation. So I don't entirely know why the response should be different. Regardless of the circumstances, we need to look at what can we do to make our kids safer.
Bob Lowry.
Mark, if I could follow up to what Michelle's comments is that, you know, too often we look at this classification of the missing child and runaway family abduction, whether or not be a stereotypical abduction of a child, to determine what risk that child makes. And the public makes a judgment call on that oftentimes, and we discourage it because oftentimes what we don't have the ability to do is see what the risk these children face. And again, I'm trying to be an alarmist, but this became, when we talk about runaway children or family abduction matters, we do sometimes see or face a very desensitized public and a very desensitized media when it comes to needing their help. Instead, we've always embraced now what we call a risk assessment model when it comes to these children. And if you'll notice on our posters at the National Center, we no longer put that classification on our posters, and we stopped that practice a couple of years ago for that very reason, because a missing child is a missing child. The risk they face could be great. And to Michelle's point about runaway children is, you know, not all these children are behavioral issues that are having problems at home with discipline and they have run away because they don't care to live under those rules. Some of those children are running away from a problem at home. Could be neglect and abuse. We've seen situations like that. But we also look at these cases where children have been lured by someone, or maybe someone has talked them into being introduced to a very high-risk lifestyle because they've been convinced that this is better for them. And again, I think it's important that we remember we're talking about children here and who can be influenced. We've seen this happen with adults, so it can certainly happen with our most vulnerable population.
Michelle Garcia, a spokesman for the Metropolitan Police Department, said recently that all of the 501 juveniles who were reported missing thus far this year, quote, left voluntarily, meaning that they are indeed runaways. So this notion that it is voluntary makes it sound as if, you know, there's no problem here, but obviously runaways are going to be a big part of what you're looking at in this task force.
Absolutely. To build on what Bob was saying is, even if they may have left voluntarily, because they are no longer at home, because they're not in the care of a responsible adult, they are now at greater risk and more vulnerable to someone who may prey on them, like a trafficker, or more vulnerable to other types of exploitation or victimization. And so we are absolutely concerned about these youth, even though all information indicates that they have run away from home. And as Bob was saying, we want to, when they come back, assess, why is it they ran away? Is it an unsafe home for them to go back to? Are they in need of other assistance or services? Have they experienced abuse or neglect? Are they being victimized? Are there mental health issues? And so all of these are pieces that we're going to be looking at to ensure that we do that robust assessment and we ensure that they have the services that they need and ultimately they are going back into safe places.
WAMU reporter Patrick Madden reported on this question about runaways and runaways who then become the victim of sex trafficking earlier today. Let's hear a little bit of that.
Courtney's House is a local drop-in center for victims of child sex trafficking. Executive Director Tina Front says she's seen the number of young people referred to her program nearly double recently, from 4 to 5 cases a week to now 8 or 9. This rise could be caused by more awareness of the issue or better training for caseworkers, but trafficking in the D.C. region, Front says, isn't a myth. It's happening right now in broad daylight at malls, schools, in person and online.
I think that people don't understand what trafficking is, right? Because we see and hear the word human trafficking, we think abduction.
But cases involving straight-out abduction are rare, Front says. Most of the time, traffickers prey on children by first gaining their trust. Sometimes it's gang members, pimps, family members, people online.
Bob Lowry, Mayor Bowser has downplayed the connection between runaways and child sex trafficking, but your organization has some disturbing statistics on that connection, right?
Well, you know, that based on the numbers of cases that we've seen, and this is anecdotal, is that we're seeing 1 in 6 children who are runaways at risk for child sex trafficking. But I think it's important to point out is that that number can be a little bit misleading for a couple of reasons. One is the number of cases that we see are cases of foster care children are from social services that are very disproportionately represented within our database as missing children. And I bring that up because that is what we consider a very uniquely vulnerable population of children. They're under the care of states and local jurisdictions. They're easy prey to those who are willing to take advantage of them. And we see them disproportionately represented in the numbers of those children who are being trafficked or attempted to be in trafficked. So, you know, in fact, we feel so strongly about it. We actually asked that we be included in a law that was signed by President Obama just a couple of years ago, calling the Preventing Sex Trafficking and Strengthening Families Act, that now mandates the reporting of those children not only to law enforcement but also to the National Center so we can start providing resources and help when it comes to those kids.
We have a message from a social worker in the district who says the panel is dancing around the issue that race plays in this problem. If you look at these pictures, it's all black or Latino youth. That's why people aren't as concerned about them. Also, to say that the problem is internet predators is a red herring to keep the government from having to fund mental health services for these youth. If they had better mental health services, they might not run away. Michelle Garcia.
So one of the announcements that the mayor made last week in terms of our initiatives in response to this is exactly what this person just indicated. We are looking to provide additional resources to those organizations that work with youth, including providing mental health services as well as other holistic wraparound services to them. There's an opportunity we have to look at where can we enhance those services and really working with the community-based providers who have been working with these populations all along. And yes, we know from looking at this story as well as the analysis that's been happening around the country is that when we look at missing youth, the rates of missing youth of color versus white youth and who gets the attention. And absolutely, that is a discussion here in the district that we're having and ensuring that the services that are being provided are acknowledging that and are culturally competent in how those services are being provided.
Let's hear from Catherine in Springfield, Virginia. You're on the air, Catherine.
Hi. Just a little bit of historical perspective. The very tragic case of Chandra Levy. I remember that her parents came into town and demanded and pretty much got the full attention of the D.C. Police Department in that case. And for some time, I think it was Gordon Peterson and I think it was Channel 9, ran a series every evening profiling a child who had disappeared. Who was missing, and very often the families could not get the attention of the police. They would say, just, we can't do anything about that. And usually the people were people of color who were missing. And this seems to be a bit of an overreaction to, it's like the pendulum has swung the other way. I say, so be it. You know, if there's more attention paid where it should be paid, that's not a bad thing to me.
Bob Lowry, how important is media attention in these kinds of cases? Is it useful? Is it just extraneous?
Well, it's very important to us, and I'll tell you, as I said, is our most powerful tool is to engage the public as the eyes and ears of law enforcement and to report sightings of missing children. I know that we've talked about the disproportionate numbers of children of color that are being reported missing, and I'll tell you, the records at the National Center certainly reflect that. I would say over 50% of the cases that are reported to us are minority children, and about 40% of those are going to be Caucasian children. So I think there's some perception issues there. But to your caller's point is a case like Chandra Levy does garner a lot of media attention because of the circumstances of what happened and the horrible, horrific circumstances, not only what happened, but you know who she was associated with also drove some of the media attention in that particular case. We don't always see that. With missing children and abducted children, I can tell you that the younger the age of the child, we don't have any problem getting media attention. And I would point a 5 or 6-year-old that had been taken maybe out of a backyard, we're going to get the full attention of the public and the media. When we saw this horrific circumstances with Relisha Rudd, who's, as I said, we worked alongside with D.C. Metro PD on some of these aspects, and certainly touched all of our hearts when this child, who is still missing, and that search continues to this day. So I think it's sometimes it's the age of the child that dictates this, but I also come back to one point: all of our missing children deserve the public's attention, and we really do need that. And we don't want to minimize, even though this came out as a fake news story, the risk that these children face, but we need to get them back. And I agree with what Michelle said. We need to look at the underlying circumstances. If they are runaways, why did they run, and what services can be provided to keep these children in a safe place?
We have an email from Marie Cohn, a child advocate, who says, I'm glad the guest mentioned that some runaways may be abused or neglected. I read that one of the missing children ran away from her foster home because of abuse. Do we know what percentage of runaways or missing children are foster kids? Is that an issue?
It is. And, you know, the foster children population is about 400,000 per day. So it's a very small segment
nationwide, of our
population, like, frankly, less than 1%. But they are disproportionately represented in our missing children statistics, which is why we are embarking in a very aggressive campaign to provide services to those children who oftentimes don't have families or places to go and are easily preyed. So our foster children initiatives are going on right now are very robust, and frankly, we need more help when it comes to that. And we're still getting our arms around that circumstance of the exact vulnerabilities those children face, but it is, I would say, disproportionate to other children who come out of homes.
Let's hear from Andrew in the district. Andrew, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Your colleagues have kind of already talked about this a little bit, but I'm wondering if the mayor saying at the press conference and a couple of your guests saying, too, that there's a distinction between kids that ran away and kids that were lured away by traffickers, if making that distinction already, you know, makes people feel more that the police don't care about them and their families than they already do.
Michelle Garcia?
I would say the fact that it was the MPD's initiative to ensure that the public knew about these youth who did run away actually demonstrates that we are committed to putting whatever resources we can to try and bringing these kids home. I think we are definitely on the forefront in terms of dedicating both resources and raising public awareness and engaging the public to find these youth who have run away and in some cases have left repeatedly. Because both Bob and I have said this, and we'll go back to it time and time again, is even one missing youth is one too many, and particularly these that have the increased vulnerability because they may be in the child welfare system. Those are the ones we really want to pay attention to. And I just want to add one thing to your previous question, is that element of around children who are in the child welfare system. It's exactly why the district's working group is being co-chaired by myself and the director of the Child and Family Services Agency, because we know that so many of these youth are involved in that system.
We should also note that the Metropolitan Police, when they post cases of missing children, they never list the circumstances. They never say runaway expressly so that the public won't be that dismissive, oh, it's just a runaway kind of thing. Michelle Garcia, the city police department has been has announced that they have been closing cases much more quickly. How are they doing that? What's made the difference?
Well, I think there's several things that have occurred. Again, part of the mayor's announcement was increased staffing for MPD who are working on these cases. And I also think that the social media campaign has had the intended results, that we have already heard that a number of youth have been located based on the postings. In at least one case that I'm aware of, a youth themselves was made aware that they were on that posting and returned home when a friend or a peer alerted them that they were being listed as missing. So I think the public engagement, I think the increased public awareness is absolutely contributing to it.
Michelle Garcia is going to be the head of the Mayor's Task Force on Missing Children. Bob Lowry is vice president at the Center for Missing and Exploited Children. We were joined earlier by Benjamin Radford, deputy editor of Skeptical Inquirer Science Magazine. Thanks for coming in. When we come back after a short break, we'll switch gears and talk about beer in Maryland and the arrival of Guinness in Baltimore County, what that will mean for the fledgling craft beer industry in the state. I'm Mark Fisher. This is the Kojo Namdi Show.
Thanks for listening to the Kojo Namdi Show. And if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at WAMU.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.